Yeah, actually, it was quite a surprise for me going back to all those old emails and discussions and so on, because of course I don't remember all the details by now. Actually, things started long before 10 years ago, but Osmocom or OpenBSC or whatever, the first project didn't exist before that. So Osmocom as a word was actually only created in 2010, so depending on how you phrase it, 10th anniversary was of the word, like the name Osmocom is not yet, but the software which started the project, even before it was called that way, was called BS11 ABIS, and then later it was called BSC Hack, and then it was called OpenBSC, and then it called Osmo NITB, and now we have Osmo BSC and Osmo MSC and so on. So we used rather old and large BTSs that attached to E1, consume lots of power, you can use it as a heating under your desk. We still used Subversion at the time, and we had no clue about GSM when we started. Well, not exactly no clue, but at least not on that level. So if we look at the timeline, actually, 2005 is when it started. Because at that point, BS11, which is a Siemens base station from the 90s, showed up on eBay. And I think I bought first one and then two more. Because they were so inexpensive, and you never know when something like that shows up again. So I ordered them and put them in my basement and started to figure out how to do anything with that. And I actually had to track down some kind of installation manual or, you know, configuration manual, something like that, because there was no documentation included at all. And actually, I figured out that the BTS was not built by Siemens, but rather it's just branded Siemens. It was OTE in Italy that actually built this BTS. And OTE had meanwhile been transformed or bought or renamed into Celex Communications, which, by the way, by now has, I think, gone through three or four more renamings. I don't recall what's the name now of this entity, but I tracked them down and I actually found somebody who was willing to give me documentation for a device that was end of line already for, at that time, probably 10 years or 8 years or so. And without any support contract or without anything, under NDA, of course. And it was really just installation manuals, like, you know, how do you mount this to the wall, and how do you, what's the pinout of the connector, and how do you power it up, and so on. It's not really giving you information about what the protocol is or any of that. So it was not really, how can I say, information that normally you would expect to be protected by an NDA. But okay. So then there was no activity in 2006 because I got involved with OpenMoCo, which is a project about an open source mobile phone in Taiwan. And a lot of the people who were involved early with Osmocom came actually from OpenMoCo. So we had Holger and Daniel and myself and others who basically had an interest in GSM on the phone side at the time and were working in that area, and then later on also got involved with the Osmocom project. So no activity there because all the time was spent on developing OpenMoCo. In 2007, one of the people who also bought a BS11, Willy, he actually managed to provide us with ABIS protocol traces from a BS11 in a real network. To get the startup of when things were, you know, when the BTS powers up, how, what kind of protocol exchange goes on, how does it communicate with the Siemens BSC. So we had the traces, but again, we were all busy doing OpenMoCo work. So we didn't really do anything with that information, and Willy kept pinging, oh, is this still alive? Are you still interested? Are you doing anything? And in 2008, we basically settled that we will use an HFC E1 card, which is a chipset from a German company called Chip Cologne, as an E1 interface card, because that's supported by the MISDN stack, which is in the Linux kernel. On the PC side, and all the people interested by such a card. And also, I think it was actually also Willy who donated a Wandel & Goltermann MA10. That's an E1 protocol analyzer. It's a full-length ISA card for a PC with an ISA bus. And on the end, it actually has highly proprietary connectors to connect the E1 interface. So I had to actually first shop some obsolete proprietary connectors to actually connect to that card. And then we could also do protocol tracing of E1. So we could connect the BTS to a Linux PC with the E1 card. And we also, in addition to that, can have a protocol tracer on the E1 line with a Windows 95 PC with an ISA slot to actually show the protocol trace. And things really got starting when Dieter, whom many of you know, buys a BS11 in August 2008, because contrary to the other people who have been playing with it so far, he actually had the time and determination to do something at that time with it, so he's extremely productive. And in September, less than 2 months basically after he bought the unit, he has something called BS11 init, which is basically doing a playback of the messages that go back and forth in the protocol trace. So we had a protocol trace, how the BS11 starts up from a Siemens BSC, and this BS11 init was basically a C source code file with lots of const arrays of bytes, and it would basically play them back and only do the necessary magic to sequence numbers and so on, which is different every time you execute it, basically. But everything else was really just a playback of the messages. At the time, we had very little clue about what these messages were or where we could find more about them. Actually, I realized then at some point that TS1221 is the OML bring-up and that Siemens only had slightly extended it, so we could make more sense of those messages. So none of the protocols at that time were implemented in Wireshark or something like that, so that what we had to create it first. But then, yeah, basically, he got it to the point where BCCH is live. So you see a new network on your phone, cannot register to it because all the logic in the state machines and everything is missing. But yeah, I mean, you have a BCCH live from a BTS on eBay. That was great at the time. And then that success triggered me. Also, I basically left OpenMoCo in 2008, so I had more time again. And with Dieter's success, the combination triggered me to be productive in October to December timeframe of 2008. And it was actually initially called really OpenBSC. So the subversion repository was called OpenBSC. Already at that time, and since it was basically clear that we will be able to do something useful with those devices, I bought the entire surplus stock that was still available of the BS11 devices, because as usual what happens is if then there's some open source software for some obsolete hardware, suddenly the obsolete hardware becomes 3 or 4 or 10 times more expensive because somebody else who is unrelated with the seller has suddenly developed some software and released it. So I wanted to prevent that and make sure that these devices are available to the community at low cost. So I actually rented some storage space here in Berlin and put all those. So it's 70 units, which means about 140 cartons and 70 times 28 kilograms plus packaging, basically. So it was a real nice full warehouse of BS11 units. And then in December 2008, we had basically at Christmas, really, December 24th, 2008, I did the initial commit to the subversion repository. So you can figure what I did over Christmas, because then December 29, we did the demo at the CCC Congress, where we could actually show that the BTS goes live and the location update request. I think we could already accept the location update at that point, but that's as far as we had implemented it. So bring up of the BTS and processing the RAT request, allocating the dedicated channel on ABIS, getting the RR messages in the mobility management for location update and responding to it. I think that was the extent at that time. I would have to watch the old talk. The recording is there. It's linked on the, if you look at the slides later on the PDF, it's actually linked here if you want to watch the video of that. I didn't. Ever since. So, and that then was, of course, big news, and lots of people got interested in GSM, so they could get the BS11, buy a 400, the BS11, I think, was €300, buy a €400 ISDN card, build your cabling in between, install the firmware over serial line into the, or configure it, provision it, create the objects in the BTS, the managed objects, and so on. At some point, you could actually reproduce that. So how many people in here have ever worked with a BS11? Yeah, so we have 1, 2, 3, 4. Sylvain, you never had a BS11? No? Okay. that's now public information. Okay, yeah, so, and that spawned actually interest by even a commercial company, to my big surprise. So there was a company from Dresden called Netzing AG who had these IP access nano BTSs. And the founder and CEO of that company actually went to the CCC Congress just because he saw my the announcement that there would be some open source GSM stuff presented. And he caught me after the talk and said, oh, you know, I have these small IP-based base stations and I don't really have any software to, excuse me, to run them with. So maybe we can add support for those BTSs to your software. And actually, he funded the development of that. So from 2009 onwards. Excuse me. We had support for AVIS over IP, so very, very early on, actually, after the start of the project. In 2010, we added support for another E1 stack or other cards. So far, we only had these HFC E1 cards, which were rather expensive and only available in Germany, really. And internationally, from the Asterisk community, the DADI-supported cards from Digium were more, or clones of that, were more common. So we added support to that in 2010. Also in 2010, we started with Osmo SGSN for packet switch support, only for the Nano BTS, because the E1-based BTSs, they don't even have support. Or at least those we had access at the time, they were really 2G only. They didn't have GPRS support. And we didn't have a packet control unit anyway yet. So GPRS would really only work with Nano BTS for quite some time. Also in 2010, quite early on, the initial work for the BSC-only Osmo BSC happened. So Holger was basically contracted by OnWaves to do a BSC-only version of the Osmo Comp stack. At that time, we only had the network in the box, and he created this first version of Osmo BSC, which we now call Osmo BSC SCCP Lite these days, to distinguish it from the new Osmo BSC. Yeah, so all that goes far back, actually. Then also, in slightly later in 2011, we added support for a couple of other BTS models, such as the Nokia BTSs. I think Dieter actually did that work, and Sylvain maybe to some extent, the Nokia BTS support, I think. Yeah. And the Ericsson RBS 2000, I think I worked mostly on that, but I don't actually recall. You can look at the Git log. Yeah, also in 2011, Osmo PCU started to be created by Ivan Klichnikov and Andreas Eversberg, which meant that we would be able to run GPRS also on non-nano BTS networks at some later point. In parallel to that timeline, which ends in 2011 before now, we also had developments on the mobile phone side, OsmoCom BB. So basically, after spending 2008, late 2008, 2009 on the network side and getting that to a point where we could do voice calls, in 2010, in January, some people started to work on OsmoCom BB, which is the mobile station side implementation. And that was basically, as far as I recall, mainly Dieter, Sylvain, Steve, and me working on the layer one side of things, and Andreas mostly working, excuse me again, on layer two and higher layer protocol parts. And yeah, so to get the layer one going, I actually took off any work. I didn't do any, I was freelancing at the time, didn't do any paid work for 3 months to get that layer one implemented and going. And really after 3 months, we had something that sort of worked, at least you for you know, not stable, no handovers, no all kinds of things, but at least you could register to a network, and I think you could also at least do SMS at the time. Not sure about voice calls yet at that point. Yeah, the development of Osmocom BB was very active until 2012, and then basically it stopped because, well, first of all, the compatible phones got somewhat rare, and I guess all the people really had this obscure interest in playing with GSM at that day. They had tried Osmocom BB, and they were no longer interested in that because, well, it was sort of done. In 2016, luckily, due to Vadim, we have some new developments in Osmocom BB named TRXCon and Fake TRX, which allow us to run a virtual mobile phone over a virtual UM interface against Osmo BTS TRX, and then we can run the entire following Osmocom stack. So now we can use that without the hardware and without an RF path, and that's what we use extensively in all our automatic testing, which will be covered later on in a separate talk. Also now, in recent years, Piotr, with help from Vadim, is developing GRGSM, which is a GNU Radio-based GSM mobile station side physical layer in normal GNU Radio, C++, and Python code. So you can basically, without having to have one of those specific phones for which we developed Osmocom BB at the time, you can now use GRGSM as a physical layer and use the layer 2, layer 3 code of Osmocom BB to register to a normal network or also to a real BTS with Osmocom in the back. So we do have new development and new activity there in Osmocom BB, which is extremely pleasing to see that it's not just, you know, dead ever since. Also, we worked on 3G, 3.5G networks. That was then much later. In 2015, there was a talk at the CCC Congress in December, as usual, running your own 3G network. Of course, it was referring to the running your own GSM network talk a few years earlier, 5 years earlier, actually. No, 7 years, really? Maybe I got the date wrong. I thought it was exactly 5 years. Maybe it was 2013. My apologies if that is wrong. So yeah, it was a big hack because it was still NITB time. We had no BSC-MSC split and hence no RAN to core network split. And as you know, the core network is shared between 2G and 3.3, but the radio access network is not. So, but it was an incremental step to a more cleaner architecture. Now we have that split. Now we have the IU interface, and now we can talk to 3G. We have still a rather slow or small amount of users compared to the 2G stack, but yeah, it's unfortunately, I would have expected, you know, once the Osmocom 3G stack's out there, that more people would be hacking the femtocells that you can find on eBay and trying to attach them to the stack. That hasn't really happened so far. So to our knowledge, there's basically two different devices that people are using, the or types of devices that the Osmocom 3G stack is used with, but nobody really appeared to be interested in adding more support for low-cost devices that show up on eBay, which basically have some kind of cryptographic lockdown and that needs to be circumvented, but is often very possible. Also, we had many SDR projects, so Osmocom never only was about the GSM stack, but we have many other projects under the umbrella. And basically, when Osmocom BB was started, we created the Osmocom umbrella, under which then OpenBSC and all the other projects were started. So one of the first SDR projects that I at least recall was Osmo SDR at the time, where a couple of guys in, north of Franconia or Hessen to some extent, got together to build hardware and firmware for a small device that we created using the E4000 tuner chip, which was a silicon tuner used in DVB quite a bit. And then in March 2012, Steve created RTL SDR, which I think is really the single most important SDR project to democratize access to SDR to everyone, because the inexpensive DVB-T receivers, that's really the entrance barrier is so low now to receive applications, at least at that time. Yeah, unfortunately, it also more or less removed the need for Osmo SDR because, well, if you can get a 20 euro device that has the same tuner as a much more expensive device because it's manufactured in low volume and so on. Yeah, so Osmo SDR, basically, I think, not sure how many units were ever built, maybe 25 or something like that. So that was it. We also have in 2012 GR Osmo SDR from Dimitri. Which is used by a lot of people from the GNU Radio community without really knowing anything about the Osmocom, or maybe that's the only thing of Osmocom they know or they're exposed to, which is sort of a unified input and output driver infrastructure for many different SDRs in the GNU Radio universe. In 2013, also Osmo TRX was forked from the OpenBTS transceiver. That meant we could also do run our Osmocom 2G stack on board of general purpose SDR board, such as a USRP, as that was integrated by Fairwaves. So we also have projects like GR Phosphor from Sylvain and Dimitri, and last but not least, this year, Steve could reproduce his democratization of SDR access for the transmit side by using USB VGA dongles as inexpensive transceivers, which is now known as Osmo FLTK. We also have other projects like an Osmocom AIS transmitter and Osmocom ADSB transmitter. We have Strangelove as a GUI program. We have a library for accessing Miri SDR, and we have some IQ balance module for GNU Radio. Not sure if that's still used by anyone. It is. Okay, good, great. At least it hasn't received many commits in a long time, I guess. Yeah, it's complete. Okay, that's good. Yeah, that's always good. So we also say Osmocom BB is complete now, and we don't need any. Yeah, it's as complete as Osmo Tetra, no. We also have a couple of other telecom systems because, of course, I mean, the driving force for me always was to learn about sort of obscure telecom systems that I used a lot, but nobody seems to know anything about. And GSM was one of them. Before that, I did work on RFID protocols, which nobody really knew about back then. And now there was Tetra was something that I had a personal interest in, the terrestrial trunk radio. So we have an SDR receiver, demodulator, decoder, and parser of Tetra. Some parts of the code also prepared for transmit, but that was never tested or used. We have Osmocom GMR, which implements the GMR1 standard, which Sylvain created. Not the standard, the Osmo GMR. But maybe he knows the standard better than the authors now. And that's used by, for example, Soraya satellite systems, but also other satellite systems. We also have OP25, which is for the APCO25 project, which is a trunk radio system used in the US, which is a completely different developer group. We don't really ever have much interaction with them. They just, you know, their hosting sort of went away, and we said, okay, you can just host your stuff on Osmocom.org, and that's basically how that came into place. We also have some other projects in other languages. So not only do we like obscure communication systems, some of us also like obscure languages. So I started a couple of Erlang projects in 2010 and did a lot of work on that in 2010-2011. Also, Vance Shipley, unrelated to the Osmocom project, released or rather contributes his TCAP and MAP stack in Erlang. And actually, there are some production applications built on it, which run until today very successfully and very quietly. I just got feedback from the user who said, yeah, it's like they don't even know it's there anymore. It just runs, which is, of course, nice. But yeah, then it was working too well, so there was no ongoing development contracts or anything. So it basically, the projects sort of died, or at least are in a deep coma. As nobody has picked it up. I guess the lesson learned was if you pick an obscure language and an obscure topic, then the intersection of people with the required skill and or interest is close to zero. Nevertheless, I'm still convinced Erlang is a very nice language to develop telecom applications in. So maybe we get back to that at some time. Holger had sort of probably the same experience. I don't know, I'm just assuming. So he enjoyed Smalltalk. His Smalltalk code, I presume, has reached higher maturity than the Erlang code that I did. At least it was used longer or developed further. But also, like the Erlang project, some of his work is used in production networks 24/7 ever since. But yeah, I'm not aware of anyone really contributing to it or continuing these developments. So it's also sharing the fate of the Erlang projects so far. It doesn't mean it has to stay that way, but at least that's my understanding. And if I'm representing that wrong, I apologize to Holger, who is not here, unfortunately. Yeah, we also had some hardware projects. SimTrace, I guess everyone still knows because it's still actively used. We have a talk about SimTrace 2, the successor here at the event as well. We also have Osmo BTS amplifier created by Sylvain, if he still remembers that. Well, it's 6 years ago. We also have some E1 tap adapter, some GPS evaluation modules, some OCXO evaluation module, a PCIe breakout board, a multi-voltage UART, and most recently some SFP experimentation boards. You can see a gallery of that here, so we have some graphics in the slides at all. Yeah, lots of green PCBs with lots of components on them. Yeah, we also have a couple of struggling or failed projects, which is sad, but yeah, it happens. So Osmocom card operating system, the OsmoCOS, never came to play, so we never had an OsmoCOS play, no. The idea, I found a chip in China, a smart card controller chip called CC32RS512, which was basically an ARM-based smart card chip with documentation, because normally all the chips for smart cards come with no documentation whatsoever, and if you sign NDAs and give away your firstborn and so on, then you might get some documentation, and of course you cannot write free software on that. So that was really an ARM-based smart card chip with hardware, DES and AES, I think, and Montgomery hardware multiplier, and all the bits and pieces you have in smart card chips to do the security-related functions, for which we got some initial proof of concept code going. We even developed a development board for it, because they also packaged this chip not only in cards, but you could actually buy the chip in a DIL 40 or DIP 40 case with JTAG exposed. So you had an ARM-based smart card chip for which you can do JTAG single stepping and debugging and so on. It was rather nice, but the code never went beyond, okay, let's make this work and see that we can actually develop for the chip, but then nothing was ever developed. And now the chip, and I think even the company, is no longer in business, so that's sad. We also had Natix BB, a port of Natix to the TI Calypso, which was supposed to run Osmocom BB on top, so we can have a proper somewhat proper operating system on the Calypso chip used in the phones. Never really was completed, and then we have some projects that were once working and don't anymore. The Osmocom location service is one example, which uses RRLP, the Radio Resource Location Protocol, and was proof of concept at Hacking at Random 2009, a campsite where we operate a network, and we could really use this to query the GPS position of various phones on the camp due to the protocols that have been designed for this, which nobody knew back then really publicly, so we made this more public, the information that operators can really query phones for GPS positions without the knowledge of the user. Also the Osmocom QC-DIAC, the Qualcomm Diagnostics, sort of is dead, and Osmocom DECT, unfortunately, also is very dead. It's a really nice, actually, implementation of DECT, the cordless telephony protocol. Parts are in the kernel, the low-level drivers, and then you have libraries in user space implementing the higher layer protocol levels. I think it even implements some of the proprietary extensions that some of the phones have to display strings on the display of the DECT phones and so on. But yeah, it reached a state where it was working once, and even there's an asterisk channel interface, so you can really create your own PBX with DECT extensions, but yeah, sort of dead, unfortunately. There is now a, unrelated to Osmocom, there is, I think it's called Redected, a SDR DECT implementation from Hunz, whom some of you know, German hacker, also known from the CCC. So yeah, maybe if somebody had an interest, there might be a way to combine Redected with the old Osmocom DECT stack and create something that doesn't require specific hardware, but that runs on general purpose SDR. But this is just guessing. Yeah, then we had a slight dip in developments during 2013 and 14 on the GSM side. In 2015, it started to pick up again. And we could see a trend that the features are really mostly relevant for professional and real-world deployments. So the early years, it was all about, you know, showing that it's possible, demonstrating to people that it can be done, and you don't need 100 man years of development to develop, let's say, an IMSI catcher or something like that, and to demonstrate the security problems in GSM and to show that they're real and not just theoretic on paper. So it was a lot of, you know, research and security-related developments, and I think from 2015 onwards, it became much more professionalized with all the good and bad parts about that. So there was less hack value and less contributions from individuals in that time, but more work on stability and quality with automatic testing, also features such as InterBSC, InterBSC handover or A over IP or LCLS, load-based handover. Now we're working on CSFB support, SGS interface, all of these things that are not really interesting for somebody to set up a BTS on his desk. You know, you don't need InterBSC handover if you only have one BSC and one BTS. You don't need a circuit switched fallback interface if you don't have LTE. So yeah, lots of more professional requirements going into the stack. We still have pure hack value community projects, but then in somewhat different areas, I would say. I mean, GRGSM is unlikely to have any professional use case. It's a very nice project and very interesting. TRXCon, well, aside from testing the network side Osmocom stack, I think it is also more of a hack value project. The E1 interface that's being developed, and different actually, being developed by different people in Osmocom. That's also, yes, there is a potential use case, but I think also the interest is mostly in the hack value and in creating an interface for a low-cost interface with 2018 technology for something that was invented in the 80s. Yeah, we also are lucky in that actually we are one of the few open source projects that social sciences have published a paper on. So there is a paper, Hacking as Transgressive Infrastructuring, Mobile Phone Networks and the German Chaos Computer Club, which I invite everyone to read. After you read the paper, you will also know what transgressive infrastructuring is. It's apparently a term in social sciences. Of course, every science has their own terminology and so on. And I'm so sorry for the embarrassing amount of typos on those slides. So basically the summary of the paper, as far as I recall it, is that the people working on these projects, and Osmocom is the largest one of those projects, I would presume, are engaging critically with infrastructure that's otherwise inaccessible and closed, and the developers are sort of dissatisfied with the status quo, that there are these pseudo-monopoly players that own all the technology and that the understanding and the access to this technology is restricted and not available to everyone, and that's sort of the transgressive infrastructuring. Okay, yeah, now in 2018 or in recent years, we have lots of pickup of the Osmocom 2G stack by all kinds of projects. We have Open Cellular in 2016 coming out using the Osmocom 2G stack in different configurations on that hardware. So if you're not familiar with Open Cellular, I recommend to check it out. It's a project initiated by Facebook now under the umbrella of the Telecom Infra project. which is an industry group of operators and vendors and so on. There's also an open cellular OC2G now as a different device than the Connect One or OCSDR, which uses a proprietary PHY, but then on top of the PHY, the entire Osmocom stack. We also have heard that there is now a crowd cell project, which is largely driven by or with Lime Microsystems, which uses the Osmocom stack for GSM. It was presented the last couple of days at the TIP Summit. I couldn't really find a public reference of being Osmocom being involved in there. And also there is an Open RAN working group where Fairverse is involved, and according to Alexander, they are using Osmocom as the 2G stack in that project. So it seems there is a lot of interest and use now, at least in these projects. I think none of them have really gone into production at this point, to my knowledge, but at least there's a lot of pickup where the Osmocom 2G stack is potentially going to be used in various deployments. And that brings me to a, unfortunately, I suppose, rather boring end of this presentation. Sorry, it's this monologue of things that happened, but still it's nice to really recap what has happened. And a couple of thanks, particularly to Dieter, for being the first one to really play with the VS11, not just buy it and put it in the basement, but actually do something with it. And not just the VS11, but of course, like 100 other devices ever since, and probably before, that I don't know about. So yeah, Netzing AG, a German company, that they funded the support for the NanoBTS and Avis IP development, which basically then paved the way for implementing Osmo BTS later on, talking the other side of the Avis IP interface. Holger, of course, for all his support and development throughout the years. The great developer community that I had the pleasure to work with, and thanks to everyone who has ever contributed to Osmocom in any form, whether financially or by code or by documenting things or testing things or submitting documentation. It's been a great ride these 10 years. Nobody knows where the future will lead us. I thought I had a slide, always in motion the future is, but yeah, I think I don't have that here though. So yeah, always in motion the future is. Yeah, so let's see where this brings us. And it's also going to be interesting where we will end up with Osmocom and how long 2G interest still exists. I mean, today it still exists to a large extent, but I think at some point there will be a point where nobody's interested in 2G anymore. So the question is, what will we do until then and after that point? But yeah, always in motion the future is. Thank you. Do we have questions regarding the history of Osmocom? No? Trivia? Sorry? Trivia? Yeah, well then, please take the microphone, yeah.
Sure. How many BS11s do you still have?
How many BS11s do I still have? Actually, I think it's down to one now. And I should know rather exactly because I'm preparing to move my apartment. And I didn't count more than one, but I have an RBS 2308 and several Nokia cells and yeah, several other equipment, but the VS11 is only one that I have left.
So they were all sold? Did or given
yeah,
away?
Yeah,
or
actually, there was more demand than, okay. than there was a supply. So even, I think, 3-4 years ago, I still got people asking, oh, do you still have a VS11? I'm like, no. That was a long time ago. And actually, if you follow the mailing list, I think just this week or last week, there was somebody asking for, oh, where can I find firmware for the VS11? So it seems people are still playing with it or using it for whatever reason, in whatever form. I think today there are much, I mean, today you can do in 20 watts what this device uses 200 watts for in terms of AC power, and you can do it in 2 kilograms versus 28 kilograms, but some people like old heavy metal. So, more trivia. Well, actually, the largest BTSs that I ever had, and some other people here have, are the Horizon Macro. What was it called? I think Horizon Macro is the Motorola Horizon Macro. It's about the size of a washing machine, but heavier. And I had two of them in my living room for some time. And then I think one was sold to Jolly, to Andreas Eversberg, and the other one, I don't remember where that went, to be honest. It's a really nice macro BTS, which I think you can have like up to 60 RX and up to 60 watts each or something. So it's like really ridiculous amount of output power. Unfortunately, Motorola never implemented ABIS, so it was, despite lots of reverse engineering, it was not possible to ever interface with it. So in the Motorola GSM network architecture, they have half of the BSC inside the BTS, and they speak a proprietary protocol between the half of the BSC that they have in the BTS and the other half that they have at the BSC. So it's really very different. And a very interesting architecture, but that's a separate discussion. According to some sources, the software in there should share some similarity with the with the Iridium network satellites, actually, that Motorola was building around the same time. And if you look at the software and you play with it and all the debug interfaces, you think like, why on earth does anyone make a BTS that complex? And then if you think about, okay, yeah, they're thinking about maybe also like they're actually designing something to be used in satellites, and yeah, then it makes sense. But for a BTS, it's completely over-engineered. But yeah, it's just my suspicion. Okay. Well, if nobody else has questions or remarks, or anyone wants to tell anecdotes, then that brings this presentation to an end.